Thank you, Lori. Lori is not only a force of nature, she's our secret weapon. I have the great, great honor of telling you that we have been joined by our hero from Bolivia. And I'm going to ask Oscar Oliveri to stand up, and we're going to give him a real round of thanks from our hearts, from all over the world, for the work you have done.
Muy buenas noches. Muchísimas gracias.
Good evening to everyone, and thank you very much. Do we need translation?
Yeah. Okay. Yo soy Oscar Olivera. Soy un trabajador fabril, obrero de una fábrica de calzados.
My name is Oscar Olivera. I'm a factory worker. I work in a shoe factory.
Vengo de Cochabamba, de Bolivia, uno de los países más pobres de Latinoamérica.
I'm from Cochabamba, Bolivia, one of the poorest countries of Latin America.
Un pueblo muy heroico que en los últimos meses ha dado una dura batalla.
A heroic people that in the last couple of months has been waging a heroic battle.
Contra el modelo económico, contra las transnacionales.
Against the economic model, against the transnational corporations.
Nuestro país, que es un país tan pobre y tan pequeño, ya no es dueño casi de nada.
Our country, it's a small country, a poor country that is now really no longer the owner of anything.
Ya no somos dueños de los aviones, de los ferrocarriles, de las fábricas,
We no longer own our factories, our airplanes, our trains.
De las minas, de los pozos de petróleo, de los caminos.
Our mines, our oil wells. Our roads.
Solo somos dueños del agua y del aire.
The only thing that is ours anymore is our water and our air.
En este último tiempo, hemos librado una lucha para que el agua siga siendo nuestra.
In these last couple of weeks, we've carried out a struggle to make sure that the water continues to be ours.
Nosotros habíamos... Nosotros habíamos pensado que el modelo económico neoliberal nos había vuelto individualistas, personas que ya no pensábamos en el prójimo y que solo pensábamos en nosotros mismos.
We almost came to believe that the neoliberal model had made us all into individualists, into people who only thought of themselves first.
Pero hemos visto que en lo más profundo del corazón y del sentimiento de los hombres y mujeres de Cochabamba,
but what we've seen is in that deepest place in the hearts and in the souls of the men and women of Cochabamba,
están los valores humanos más elevados como la solidaridad, la fraternidad.
The highest human values like fraternity and solidarity continue to exist.
La dignidad y las ganas de perder el miedo.
Dignity and the desire to lose our fear.
Por eso hemos formado un gran frente que se llama la Coordinadora de Defensa del Agua y de la Vida.
And that's why we've created this broad coalition, which is called la Coordinadora de Defensa del Agua y de la Vida, the Coordinator for the Defense of Water and Life.
Este gran frente está formado por campesinos.
This coalition is made up of campesinos, peasant peoples.
Obreros, maestros, profesionales.
Workers, teachers, professionals.
Jubilados.
Retired people.
Y muchos jóvenes desocupados.
And many, many young people without work.
Hemos tenido días muy difíciles porque hemos tenido que enfrentar de manera muy desigual una imposición del Banco Mundial y una imposición del gobierno actual.
We've been through some very difficult days because under very unequal circumstances we had to face the impositions of the World Bank.
Y el gobierno de
and the government of Bolivia.
Pero esta lucha nos ha dado la posibilidad
but this struggle has also given us the opportunity
de autoorganizarnos
to self-organize, to organize ourselves
de unirnos
to unify ourselves
de perder ese miedo que tenemos cada uno de nosotros
to lose that fear that each one of us carries inside.
Y un pueblo tan pequeño y tan pobre, pero unido, ha hecho coser, como David hizo coser a Goliat.
And this small, poor people, unified, was able to fight off this giant, just as David did Goliath.
Un pueblo... Creemos que la lucha del pueblo de Cochabamba en Bolivia es una lucha, es un ejemplo para todo el mundo.
We think that the struggle of the people of Cochabamba could be an example for peoples all over the world.
Y que unidos y organizados podemos vencer y avanzar.
And if we are unified and if we are organized, we can be victorious.
Es por eso que yo agradezco la invitación a este encuentro de todos los hermanos de Latinoamérica.
So in that sense, I want to thank all the brothers and sisters here for the invitation to be able to participate.
Para decirles de que
to be able to tell you
que podemos, pero que también tenemos ahora un gran desafío.
That we can have victories, but we also face enormous challenges.
Ha escapado una gran transnacional de Bolivia.
We were able to get this transnational corporation out of Bolivia.
Y ahora está en nosotros, los cochabambinos, el poder.
Now it's up to us, the cochabambinos,
de poder seguir teniendo el agua en nuestras manos y administrar.
To take control of our own water and administer it our own way.
Nos han dicho que el Estado no sirve, pero tampoco sirve las transnacionales.
We've been told that the state is not an agent that can do this, and we also know that the transnationals can't.
Por eso nosotros queremos construir algo diferente a lo que nos quiere imponer el modelo económico neoliberal.
That's why we want to do something different, something our own, something that's not imposed by the transnationals.
Así como hemos podido luchar de manera unida y solidaria, venimos a pedirles su solidaridad con el pueblo cochabambino y boliviano.
And just as we've been able to struggle in a unified way with solidarity, we also ask you for your solidarity in these challenges that we face in the future.
Hace tiempo que no escuchaba a nuestros pueblos. Yo les digo a ustedes, muchas gracias por escucharnos a Bolivia.
It's been a long time since our people have been heard, and I thank you very much for listening.
Well, I don't think I'm the only one who's deeply moved in this room. Thank you. When we're on the streets tomorrow and Sunday and Monday, I will be thinking about you. I'll honor now to introduce the last speaker of our panel, and I thank Vandana and I thank Ralph very much for being patient with us. This was too special not to honor and include. But I have the honor now of introducing the last speaker, Vandana Shiva. And Vandana, they can't stand you. I mean, I don't know how we're going to handle this. If Laurie is a force of nature, Vandana is our spiritual leader. Internationally acclaimed as one of the most passionate and articulate critics of globalization, Vandana Shiva is a physicist, philosopher of science, and an indefatigable activist. In 1982, she left her job as scientific researcher at the Indian Institute of Management to found the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Natural Resource Policy, where she now serves as a director. A winner of the Right Livelihood Award, which is the alternative to the Nobel Prize, in 1993, Vandana is also Science and Environment Advisor to the Third World Network and the Asia Pacific People's Network, and Associate Editor of The Ecologist. Vandana's books include Monoculture of the Mind, Biotechnology and the Environment, Staying Alive, Women, Ecology and Development, Biopiracy, The Plunder of Nature and Knowledge, and her latest, which is fabulous, called Stolen Harvest. Please welcome me in, join me in welcoming Vandana Shiva.
If I didn't love you and my colleagues in the IFG as much as I do, and I wasn't as outraged with the three institutions that are devastating the lives of people around the world, I just would never get the energy to get onto that flight from India and keep coming back to this country. And this particular time, I've left behind in our home an old Gandhian couple, Jagannath and Krishnamma. He's 85 years old, he's nearly blind and nearly deaf, but he doesn't give up fighting. And I met him in 94 when we joined forces to fight the shrimp industry, which was destroying India's 7,000 kilometer coastline, and not just India's, but every other country. And in most countries, as in India, the problem started with the World Bank financing those shrimp farms. It isn't that we didn't have shrimp harvesting. It isn't that we didn't have sustainable shrimp industry. But the World Bank, of course, in its very clever ways, manages to replace every sustainable system in the world with a totally devastating system. And then tells the world that they're helping the poor and protecting the environment. Well, in 96, the fact that for every dollar traded and earned through shrimp exports, $10 were destroyed in the lives of local communities, in farming, in fisheries, through the creation of saline deserts because of these shrimp farms. The Supreme Court ruled that this industry had to close. And the ruling was amazing. It was path-breaking. They said, it seems that the government has been wooed by the dollar economy, and yet it is destroying the economy of life of the people. It is our duty as the highest court of the land to uphold the fundamental right of all people in this country to have a right to life. But within a week of that judgment, The Indian arm, the Indian credit arm of the World Bank Rural Agricultural Financing, called NABARD, had sent a letter to every chief minister of the states to say, if this ruling of the Supreme Court is actually implemented, it will hurt our returns on investment. And of course, the returns on investment come all the way back to Washington. You know, the fact that they keep colonizing new streets of this city is related to the fact that they get $1 billion out of the poor of the world annually. With the effect of NABARD, the government then tried to undo the laws which had allowed us to get the closure of these industrial farms. And in 1997, we managed to kill the bill that would have done it, but they never rest. So the bill is coming back to Parliament to undo the Supreme Court judgment, and Jagannathanji and his wife, Krishnamma, have come to Delhi, and they will be in Delhi till we manage to get rid of that corrupt law again. Jagannathanji will be leading the protest against the World Bank in Delhi on the 17th. And for those of you who are interested to sign the appeal that he has signed, because this time he is determined, he says, I am 85 years old. I have gone on fasts before, but this time I will go on a fast unto death, if for nothing else but to reverse this genocidal economy. So we have an appeal from him, signed by him and me. It's circulating in India. It's addressed to the Prime Minister in 97, as opposition chief had guaranteed him that till I live, Jagannathanji, this bill will never come to Parliament. And now he is piloting it, because now he's the Prime Minister. And one thing about globalization is, it doesn't matter what your ideology, it doesn't matter what you claim when you try to get votes, and I know it's going to be very, very different with Ralph. But for most people who go into politics for power, the moment they are in heads of state position, today, every head of state is a servant of the corporate world and a servant of the three dictatorships. Another phrase that I've repeatedly heard in the last few days in response to the protests is, but the World Bank is needed by the third world, of course, because it removes poverty, but also because it cleans us up. You know? We are corrupt, and the World Bank comes to help us out. You know? Everywhere where there's a shrimp farm financed by the World Bank, there is now the creation of a whole new constituency in India called the Shrimp Mafia. And everywhere where there's a water loan from the World Bank, there is now the creation of a new water mafia. Because once universal rights have been robbed from people, and the market determines who will get what in situations of poverty, mafias join up with markets to become the new structures of governance. I never really, you know, I didn't even know there was a World Bank. I was one innocent physicist. And then I found my country being overtaken by eucalyptus, and we did this study, and Teddy is here, Teddy Goldsmith. He published it in The Ecologist, and that's how we became friends 20 years ago. It's a two-decade anniversary of fighting the World Bank. And then I remember in 1985, there was Baba Konebel in Rome in the Society for International Development, and there was Teddy with suitcases full of the issue of The Ecologist that for the first time named the World Bank as a problem in the world, in a serious way for environmental destruction and creation of poverty. And I want to thank Teddy and The Ecologist. During these weeks, one of the big movements that has been present here is, of course, a very powerful movement, Jubilee 2000 for the freedom from debt. But very often, the language of the freedom from debt is translated into debt forgiveness. But the problem really is what we have in the World Bank and IMF are brilliant institutions for permanent creation of debt and permanent enlargement of debt. The Indian debt from the 70s to now has increased 5,000%. 50-fold. It used to be 500 million. Now we are paying around a billion. A third of this, at the beginning of this decade, I did a calculation, a third of the 91 billion debt we had was linked to the Green Revolution, introduced in 1966 with funding from the World Bank. And the bank said, well, the government should set up huge seed corporations and start making, you know, developing seed taken from IRI for rice and CIMIT, both run by now the Consultative International Group on Agricultural Research controlled by the World Bank. For chemicals, for pesticides. And the World Bank had this very, very creative solution to hunger. It said, why should all of India produce food? Let one little part of it called Punjab produce food and feed the rest, and let grain be shipped around the country. They created what was called a Food Corporation of India. They gave all the loans to India to make it happen. And now, 20 years down the line, they turn around and say, why are you wasting money on making seed? Wrap up your seed corporations, allow the multinationals to come in. Why on earth do you have a food corporation? Wrap it up and let Cargill replace it. Why on earth do you have public subsidies for making food accessible to people once you have produced in very capital-intensive ways through an industrial system? Remove the food subsidies. Remove the agricultural subsidies to farmers. It is as if there was a malicious plan to take agriculture away from people, put it in the hands of a centralized state, and then from that centralized state, put it in the hands of global corporations. Because it happened too fast, it happened too rapidly, it's happened all within 20 years. It seems that the role of the World Bank is to take power from communities, centralize it in states, and then through structural adjustment, centralize it in a global economy. And I think the partnership between the World Trade Organization and the World Bank is that the World Bank privatizes through coercion of structural adjustment, and then the WTO rules globalize. Unless and until the World Bank had forced us to have the entry of multinationals like Cargill and Monsanto, there is no way the trade-related intellectual property rights rules of patenting of seed could be allowed through WTO. Because if our seed was our own and there were no corporations, there was no question of intellectual property rights being imposed on us. That partnership is a very deep partnership. The partnership between IMF and the World Trade Organization, fascinating. The World Bank kept coming back to us and hitting us on the head and said, your balance of payments are in a bad situation. So India ran around, and you know we have lots of Indians living here as Americans. So India told the non-resident Indians, invest in short-term investments, we'll give you 20% returns, we have to be saved from the IMF. And the moment India built up enough foreign exchange through short-term non-resident Indian investment, IMF and World Trade Organization and the US ganged up to slap us with the quantitative restrictions dispute in the WTO to say, remove all restrictions, now you have a balance of payment comfortable position, you don't need the restriction on imports because of balance of payments. And now we are being flooded by waste from your slaughterhouses, second-hand cars, food. Coca-Cola didn't require the quantitative restrictions. That came with other forms of bullying. Air Force One. Well, the new role of the World Bank, as I see it emerging now, is we really did defeat Monsanto. We defeated it in terms of its stocks and shares. We defeated it in country after country. But it's trying to survive with the help of the World Bank. And I'll give you just two examples of how. You remember that big announcement of vitamin A rice, golden rice? Well, the whole plan is to develop it through the International Rice Research Institute. 2 days ago, while I was flying over here, there was this amazing picture in the Financial Times and a title saying, Monsanto gifts the rice genome for free. Right? And the picture was two women on one side planting rice and two men on the other side planting research papers, as if that would produce food. But that was, of course, Monsanto's research on the genome. And, of course, the women were Indian and the men were, you can guess. Well, the gifting of the rice genome is a fascinating language that's being developed. Because Monsanto has never gone on record to say they will never patent rice. All they're doing is developing a new private-public partnership to find an entry into the world when corporate entry of genetic engineering is being totally rejected. The public entry will be achieved through the World Bank. We nearly threw Monsanto out of India. The farmers uprooted the crops. We had a Supreme Court case within a week of our announcement of the Supreme Court case and its admission by the Supreme Court. The World Bank had financed the Indian agricultural system to work in partnership with Monsanto to do the genetic engineering trials through the public sector. The public sector with World Bank finances is becoming the Trojan horse for bringing biotechnology into the third world. And that is why our campaigns on biotechnology, our campaigns on intellectual property rights, our campaign on food securities will now increasingly have to keep watch on both the World Trade Organization and the World Bank, while we also keep watch on corporations. I want to wrap up with two things. One, that even though they keep talking about, oh, now the World Bank is shifting to show social lending, doesn't give me very good news, because social lending is lending so that the corporations can be financed to privatize water. The pharmaceutical industry can be financed to take over healthcare systems. The HMOs of the US can be financed to take over healthcare globally, and you know how much they've failed you here. We can't afford them in countries like ours. 54% of all loans of the bank in the last decade have been for fossil fuel projects. 13% are for water privatization. 3% was for agriculture, which is ending up being biotech promotion. So no matter where you look, every aspect of World Bank lending is transferring the assets and the little bit of wealth of the poor into the hands of corporations which will never be satiated. No matter how much biodiversity they steal, no matter how much water they steal, and how much food they steal from the poor. It has now become a disease on their part, and we have to help them out. And the way we are trying to help them out, and I want to thank Tony for suggesting that in the North, in the G7 countries, people need to start taking control over what is theirs, their public assets, their public funds. And in India, we've been building different movements around biodiversity, around food. But the onslaught of the World Bank, privatization of water, totally dismantling our food system, the new removal of quantitative restrictions and the dumping of food, wiping out millions of livelihoods, has literally compelled us to launch on the 10th of May, which you might not know is the anniversary of our first War of Independence. And like the protests now are called riots, that independence struggle was called a mutiny. Well, the 10th of May, we are going to launch our fivefold freedom. Our freedom to our seed, our freedom to our water, our freedom to our food, our freedom to our forests, and our freedom to our land. Because the World Bank... One of the other things the World Bank has done through its structural adjustment lending is to undo all land reforms in the country, and not just in India, but around the world. And our fivefold freedom is about freedom to protect, conserve, and share. It's a very different freedom from the free trade freedom of the corporations, which is the freedom to grab, to steal, and to stifle. We will not allow it to happen.